So, lecture two, welcome back. Glad to see all here, those of you who had the bravery to come back. Web students, glad to see you. Lecture two, January 19th lecture notes page, if you've got the lecture notes, which you probably should have because it'll make your life a lot easier. We're on page 21, the beginning of chapter one. You know about the housekeeping slides. Non-testable information plus testable information from Business and Marketing in the News. I do post a copy of these slides on Canvas in the learning materials module. So when you miss stuff here and you want to see it for the test, to use during the test, to study for the test, the weekly test, it's out there. You can go get it. Enrollment up to 556 students. Yay us. I don't know if anybody was interested in this from last time, but I think this is the week during which you can apply for this social media director, graphic designer, social media coordinator for the D3 Men's Hockey Club team, so there's the information if you want it. We know the dates, we know the heads up, we know the tips, I think, from last time, so let's take a look. How many of you guys do watch the Super Bowl for any reason? How many of you guys watch it more for the commercials than for the game? That would be me. I guess there are people playing football. I don't know that. I like the commercials, being a marketing guy. So let's look at that for a little bit. Super Bowl 2023, Michelob Ultra teases Caddyshack Super Bowl ad. That teases means they're showing the early edition. What's strange about that sentence all by itself? Anybody know what I'm alluding to? Anybody know what's interesting about the fact Michelob Light is advertising on the Super Bowl? Anybody? Yes.
Their beer product.
Beer product has always been there. But what beer product? Budweiser, the Clydesdale, and their dog and their brands, they have given up their exclusive sponsorship of the NFL Super Bowl, and now that opens the doorway for these other brands to be able to be on it, including Michelob Light. How many guys have seen Caddyshack, the movie? Not that many people. Maybe that you aren't the target audience here. The Super Bowl is nearing, and there's plenty to look forward to before the big game, which is slated for February 12th at the State Farm Stadium in Glendale, Arizona. Currently, Michelob Ultra is teasing its Super Bowl plans with a series of short commercials inspired by the movie Caddyshack. So we're seeing a bit about their advertising strategy. We're seeing them getting consumer interest. We're seeing a bit about them using pop culture in marketing. The ad, shared on Ultra's YouTube page, features CBS NFL analyst and ex-player Tony Roma, soccer star Alex Morgan, and boxer Canelo Alvarez reenacting iconic scenes from the 1980s comedy. So we're also using a bit of celebrities in our advertising. Here's a couple of the blurbs.
The crowd is deadly silent. Young Cinderella story happening right in front of our eyes. Former quarterback about to become tournament.
This February, Michelob Ultra is taking over the big game. Order Ultra now. This February, Michelob Ultra is taking over the big game. Get Ultra delivered now.
So if you know Caddyshack, perhaps you recognize those iconic scenes. If you don't, then you have no idea why it's interesting. But those are reenactments of scenes from Caddyshack that will appeal to a certain target audience. Roma plays Carl Spackler's Cinderella story scene, whacking flowers with a golf club. Alvarez pilots a beer truck on the green with a horn resembling that of Al Cervic's car, and Morgan draws a beer from a golf bag, which I didn't show you, with a Michelob Ultra tap, as Kenny Loggins' theme song, I'm All Right, plays in the background. So in addition to getting involvement that way, all of the ads have QR codes, allowing consumers to order beer from Instacart. And a voiceover says, Michelob Ultra is taking over the big game. Order now. And that's a particular ad strategy, getting you involved right now. Do it now. Click on the code and get it done. Anybody like Frito-Lays? Chips? Frito-Lays. 6,000 Frito-Lays chips power the brand's new track featuring pop star Anita. Who knows Anita? Oh, you like Anita as well as no. You love Anita. You're a fan. You talk to her. You listen to her. Well, then we're going to see. Indeed, one of them being another. And, yay. So there we go. All right. As a way to celebrate the power of potatoes, Lay's launched Stay Golden, a new Latinx Focus TV campaign that highlights how music, community, and potatoes can bring a bit of happiness. So we're appealing to a particular target audience, the Latinx community in particular. As part of the campaign, the brand released a new spot titled Beat Up Joy, featuring Latin Grammy-nominated artist Anita. Woo! And a remix of her song Envolver, so we use some celebrity in advertising. The 30-second spot demonstrates the joy of the Latinx community through reggaeton, dance, and bolsoteo, if you know what that is, which is a Puerto Rican and Dominican technique of modifying car sound systems to play music at elevated levels. The track was recorded in a studio, leveraging the electricity that was generated by more than 6,000 potatoes in a never-before-done way, setting a Guinness World Records title. So we're understanding a bit about subcultural values, getting consumers' attention. Didn't you guys have high school biology and you had the frog and maybe you used a potato as current to make the frog's leg jump around? Did anybody do that? No, it's not a thing anymore. So actually, potatoes will generate electrical energy, and 6,000 potatoes will generate a lot of energy. Here is the ad that they put together. You go, am I gonna dance? You dance. Stay golden. So, if that appeals to you, if you like the beat, if you like
Hi, dropshippers. It's time.
If that appeals to you, if you like the beat, if you like the music, etc., there you go. Lay's also released a one-minute spot. I probably shouldn't waste time, but I think it's interesting in getting attention on how they use potato power to create the Envolver ad. Let's see how that plays for us.
Real potatoes are the power behind Lay's potato chips. So we wondered if they could also power the music for Lay's newest ad campaign, starring Anita, the Wall Street Journal's Music Innovator of the Year. Could we record her in an equally innovative way?
But the potatoes have the energy?
Yeah.
Can you say, like, in simple words, how does it work?
Absolutely. Two electrodes in a potato creating a chemical reaction which gives us potato power. It's the same experiment we learned in middle school, just 6,000 times bigger. Come on, guys, clock is ticking.
So for people involved enough in it, that was another little attention getter for them. Yay, Lay's potato chips. Through efforts like the Stay Golden and hashtag Joy Fully Black campaigns, Frito-Lay's hopes to continue to highlight more diverse voices, both in front of and behind the camera. For Stay Golden, the brand worked with Latinx teams to produce and direct the spot, which helped aim to amplify and connect with its Latinx consumers. So they're being authentic. They aren't using a bunch of old fat white guys to create this commercial for the Latinx community. They're using authentic people, and they're connecting with the target audience. So, yay, Lay's. All right, so next we'll move on to Lecture Notes, page 21, and chapter 1 of the textbook, as we get into some course content. Coming up. So, we're going to talk about creating customer relationships and value through marketing. This is the very high-level stuff. This is not what you'll be doing the first time that you take a marketing job after you graduate from Kent State or in your internship. This is high-level stuff at this point in time. So, what is marketing that we're going to spend the next 15 weeks together mulling over? Well, let me start by saying, occasionally I disagree with the textbook. And if you read the textbook on page 4, they say, you are a marketing expert. I disagree, I'm sorry. If you're the expert, let's not spend time together. Take the test, we'll be done. You do come in contact with marketing every day. You buy stuff from marketers. You see ads, but perhaps don't process them fully as a marketer might. So you're involved in marketing every day. I don't think you're a marketing expert. What is marketing? Well, we're going to turn first to the American Marketing Association, our professional organization's definition. Marketing is the activity, set of institutions, and processes for creating, communicating, delivering, and exchanging offerings that have value for consumers or customers, clients, partners, and society at large. This is an expansive, if you really think about it, big view of what marketing is all about. It's not just about selling product and making profit, which is part of the story. This is a much bigger view. And as you'll find in marketing, almost nothing exists in marketing that isn't controversial. So when this goes out, a blogger talks about it. So here's the definition we just talked about. This article says it'll be used in the official definition of marketing in books and taught in universities nationwide. Well, here we are. It's true. Big mistake, says Mike Smock, managing director of the marketing consultancy vSenate, who blogs about marketing. In a post, Smock writes, the definition may lead marketers down the primrose path, lead them the wrong way. Marketers can hardly get it right in small enterprises. How are they going to extend that to society at large? The bottom line is CEOs are disgruntled with marketing, and this definition doesn't help. The new definition gets away from the fundamentals like sales, revenues, margin, and market share, says Smock. Smock is pretty much taking the attitude of a frontline manager of an organization whose job it is to drive sales, make profit, bring in consumers. But that all has to exist within the larger structure of a bigger organization that has a bigger focus. And if you don't have the bigger focus, you're focused just on these customers right here, right now, today, making profit, the market's going to move away from you. And you go, well, what happened? I was serving these guys. The market's moved away. You're screwed. All right. So Nancy Costolopoulos, CMO, Chief Marketing Officer of the AMA, said the association had anticipated some dissent with this definition. We think it's healthy for the profession to have a dialogue and conversation about the new definition, but 70% of 1,000 marketers responding to queries about the new definition said it's an improvement over the prior one. She said, look, it's not just about marketing and management or at that frontline level, but marketing at higher levels. But Smock is less than impressed, and he just focuses on increasingly profitable market share. And on his actual blog, he gets a little more verbal and vocal about the issue. So this is the broad definition that anyone teaching in the United States universities today would probably be
marketing.
Here we hear from one of our first guest lecturers, Don Kosek. He was at Time Warner Cable business side last when I recorded him. They're now Spectrum, and he's probably moved beyond the topic by now. But I asked him, hey, what does marketing mean to you in your position? And he's going to be more a Smock kind of guy being frontline.
Marketing is very important at Time Warner Cable business class. It really gives us the ability to go out and collect all the marketing trends, the data, put together incentives, put research and tools around to really drive sales for our organization. How I like to tell my marketing manager, her job is to really ring our phones, to get brand awareness out there and really drive sales so that we're successful.
So I have no arguments with that at the frontline level. Certainly, we have to use marketing. It's the part of the firm that looks outside the organization. Almost everybody else is looking inside to trends and data and interpreting it. You know, the big thing right now is data analytics. We know this, right? A big thing in business. It's going to help determine incentives for our salespeople. And we're going to use research, which we're going to talk about here, and tools to drive sales through brand awareness. Absolutely at that frontline level. So it's a real thing. It's important. He's not up at the higher level.
Marketing.
So marketing seeks to discover consumers' needs and wants and desires. Not all the same thing. In order to satisfy them at a profit. And let me qualify the at-a-profit part by saying, anybody interested in not-for-profit organizations? Anybody interested in not-for-profit, for example? They are not generating a profit for themselves. They still have to generate a profit to exist, but they're not generating a profit for themselves. So what I also say, at-a-profit, or to attain organizational goals, social goals, feeding the hungry, housing people, whatever it might be. They're not focused on profit per se. Through an integrated effort of the firm, in order to make this happen, in order to discover and satisfy consumers' needs, wants, and desires that are profit through an integrated, through, to do those things, you have to all pull together. All your elements in marketing you have to pull together. So that's the idea of an integrated effort of the firm. This involves the idea that we just heard from the AM definition of exchange. What's exchange mean? Well, exchange is the trade of things of value between the buyer and the seller so that each one is better off after the trade. What most typically is the thing exchanged from the customer to the marketer? What is most often the thing of value given up? Money, right? And what do you get back? What's the thing of value you get? You hope it's a value you get back? I can't quite hear you, but the product or the service that you hope was worth what you pay for it. These are not the hard questions, right? Thank you. Now, in a not-for-profit situation, you aren't necessarily, how many of you guys work with a church group or, you know, a religious group like that? So are you necessarily paying them money to participate with them? What are you giving them of value? Your time, your labor, right? And what are they giving you? Well, some sense of purpose, sense of community. That's also a form of marketing. It's not the traditional for-profit approach. So this exists in all kinds of organizations. And today we say all of this is delivered through an excellent customer experience. If you call the skills that I mentioned on the first day of class that businesses and universities and governments are looking for, customer experience was up among those skills. So today we are in an age of experience, where consumers engaging with marketers don't just want the product or the service. They want a good experience with the overall thing.
We live in an age where businesses need to look beyond the aesthetics of a product or the practicalities of a service. Where consumer engagement and loyalty count far more than features and benefits alone. Where consumers expect to interact with or even influence suppliers, not just be sold to. Products are no longer enough for today's consumers, who value experience over all else. The age of experience has arrived. The key to success in today's economy lies in delivering consumer experiences that demonstrate true differentiation. But the task is a daunting one at best. What exactly is meant by experience? And how can business influence it and drive consumer connection? The key to making consumer experience the true focus of innovation is to capture insights and expertise from across a business's entire ecosystem. Shaping the right consumer experience requires collaboration between all roles within a company, from marketing and management to sales and engineering. Only by connecting all the dots between people, ideas, and data can a business drive consumer loyalty, engagement, and value. The start of every experience is all about the anticipation and promise of things to come. In the age of experience, businesses need to place consumer experience at the heart of innovation. And that means asking the right questions and asking the right people to understand the present and navigate the future.
And of course, this is a B2B advertisement, and Dassault Systems is happy to help your organization to figure out all of these things about your people and the data and how to better create a customer experience for them. But let's think to Campbell's Chunky Soup. How do they know that they should be creating a challenge on Fortnite and then broadcasting it live over Twitch or whatever it's doing? Because they have investigating their consumers, understand who they are, understand there's a subset that's going to be involved in Fortnite, and get excited about watching people. Anybody watch esports, by the way? Esports, okay. Watching people live in this final competition, giving them an experience with the brand that they don't get just from eating Campbell's soup. So, it's excitement for the consumer. And, of course, technology is helping us to enhance our customer experience. The global augmented reality, AR, market is projected to grow from $6.12 billion in 2021 to reach $97 billion by 2028. Within the context of marketing, augmented reality allows brands to offer unique and immersive digital experiences and to engage consumers in memorable ways. Retailers such as ASOS, a British online fashion and cosmetic retailer, jewelry brand Kendra Scott, Shopify, Burberry, IKEA, Gucci, who offers a virtual sneaker, and Inca Group, which owns IKEA, have invested in augmented reality, virtual reality, or visual artificial intelligence tools to get their consumers engaged with them in unique ways that are exciting, immersive, and not easily duplicated by the competition, making them unique. Zappos, anybody know Zappos? Zappos, a couple people. Virtual try-on shoes uses augmented reality to help you visualize how a pair of shoes will look from every angle. Tap the virtual fitting room button below the product image and point the camera at your feet, and so you can see how the shoes will look on you from every angle. Nicer than just seeing a picture of the shoes up on the screen. Immerses you with the brand, gets you excited with it, yeah? So seeing and testing a product with augmented reality helps to reduce one of the issues we run into consumers, which is product uncertainty. How will that really look? While increasing buyer confidence and so sales. Yay virtual reality, yay augmented reality. So what sorts of things influence marketing at this high level that we're at right now, high up in the organization? Well, first of all, what is your mission? What are you trying to accomplish? What are your goals and objectives? Are you going global? Are you trying to reach a particular target audience? Are you engaged in social responsibility or sustainability? High level things that are going to drive the rest of the marketing effort, right? Management and people skills. You may want to go AR, but none of your old fogies know anything about computers, how to get there, or what consumers would want. Maybe that's not a good way for you to go right now. Maybe you need to gin up some new management skills or new people skills. Resources. I forget. Maybe nobody raised their hand. Anybody interested in entrepreneurship? Wants to be an entrepreneur maybe? Okay, so you guys know you are going to have vast resources. You're going to be able to do the high quality film that that 6,000 potatoes with Frito-Lay can generate. Your resources are going to help generate the marketing efforts that you can do. Marketing is also influenced by society, and it influences society as well. It works both ways. For example, we all know about the summer of the Black Lives Matter movement. We all know about the new focus on ethnic sensitivity. On one of my slides much later on, I presented the census data categorization for a subculture, American Indian. And I got a comment from a student, that's not sensitive. You're not being showing ethnic sensitivity. That's a categorization that census uses. I've now added a comment to the slide when I get there saying, I know that that's not the current term, but it's what the census uses. Apparently, they're not engaged yet in ethnic sensitivity. So to the extent that your consumers care about these societal issues, you got to pay attention to them. It's going to help drive your marketing strategy. Environmental factors also influence our consumer, like the economy. What's going on of interest right now with the economy that might be influencing our consumers? Recession? Inflation? Both. Both are happening at once. And other things like that. Weather as part of an economic factor. So a marketing organization relates to lots of people, lots of organizations and has that external focus outside the firm on these environmental factors. So the environmental factors we can talk about presently: competition, regulatory, legal, and political, economic, social, and technology. Market has to think about those things, how they're changing, how they're influencing their consumers, how it's influencing their organization. So we're busy over here in marketing. So let's think about this idea. We are going to satisfy consumers' needs, wants, and desires through an integrated effort of the firm. We're going to provide value. So does anybody here have friends? About half the class does. Webby, no, you don't have any friends. All right, so you have a friend. You want to get them a funny birthday card. Reasonable? What's one way that you could provide them with a funny birthday card? Not the hardest question you're going to hear today. What's one way you could get them a funny birthday card? Yes?
You could go to like Walmart or CVS.
You could go to a store and buy them, right? Could do that? And are you giving something of value for something of value? Well, if they value your card and your friendship. Yes. All right. What's an entirely different way you could get a funny card to your friend? Who said that? Bingo! You could make it. And it could be beautiful and have glitter on it and be funny and real personal to them. But you didn't buy it. And what's the, well, I won't tell you, because nobody here is going to know the third way I know. So what you could do is make it yourself, or you could steal one. Oh, you thought of that, huh? Shoplifters will be prosecuted. Don't do that. Don't lie, don't steal. And you could voluntarily offer someone of something of value in exchange for a card. You could buy one at Walmart or wherever you go, right? Only the third one describes marketing and exchange of something of value for something of value. Stealing it does not. And making it yourself, while it's very thoughtful, is not marketing in the sense we're thinking about it. Well, no, a barter system is a legit up thing that we will talk about when we talk about pricing. So oftentimes at a national level, we'll also talk about a very local level. Your country does not have adequate cash dollars to buy tractors that you need for your agricultural sector. You say, I tell you what, though, I got a boatload of potatoes, and I'll give you blah, 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 tons of potatoes. I don't have cash. You go take those potatoes, sell them on the open market, get the cash, and give me my tractors. That's the idea of barter. That actually would work as the idea of giving something of value for something of value. But sitting at home, cutting out cute things, and coloring it up and putting glitter on it, there's not really the essence of giving up something of value to get something of value. Oh, yeah, so you're right. So the third one would be barter, indeed. Yeah. Yes, you're right. I misunderstood. Yeah?
I remember from Mother's Day, I think it was Mary Kay's, they did a thing where you could put in your email address for like monthly alerts and stuff, and you could get an e-card for Mother's Day and send it to someone via text.
So did you get something of value? You got the card. Did they get something of value?
I don't know. That's what I'm asking.
Well, what I'm asking you is think through. I see a lot of heads nodding yes. You're nodding yes behind me. What's the thing of value they got? Your email address, your data, your involvement, the ability to connect with you. Maybe you gave them permission to email you stuff.
Yeah.
Yeah. They got something of value from you. Not the traditional money thing. Maybe closer to a form of barter. But they did get something of value to you. They want their users' involvement. They want their users' data. Very important. So you both scored.
What about the idea of buying the materials for the card as a form of marketing?
It's a stretch. You can force the issue into a gray area, but it's not the same as buying the card, right? So yeah, of course you brought the ingredients, blah, 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 but it's a little different sense. By the way, you might be using that glitter for your night out. It's a whole different purpose, right? All right. So in order for marketing to occur, first of all, you have to have two or more parties. If you just have a buyer and no seller, or just have a seller and no buyer, you don't have marketing, right? So you need two or more parties involved in a voluntary relationship. You have to be able to talk to the buyer, talk to the seller. If not, you don't have much marketing going on. And each has to have unsatisfied needs. You may want a thing, but you don't have the money to buy it. No marketing's going to happen, unless you have potatoes. No marketing's going to happen. So two or more parties involved with voluntary relationship with each other, each with unsatisfied needs. And then each party must have a desire and the ability to engage in that exchange. Any car buffs here? Car buffs? Anybody like cars? A little bit?
Yeah.
Do you drive a car?
Yeah.
What do you drive?
A 2011 Jeep Liberty.
Jeep Liberty, that's a nice car. Yeah. Have you ever thought about a BMW?
More like a Jetta.
A Jetta?
Yeah.
What's the up end of a Jetta? Is there a top end Jetta? I'm trying to push us to our limit. How about a Maserati? How about a Maserati? Good, cool car?
Yeah.
Good car?
Seems
powerful? Fast. Status?
Sure.
You have one?
No.
Why?
You want one,
but you don't have one. Why not? Well, she may have the desire for a Maserati, but she doesn't have the ability to have one. Hence, no marketing occurs. Should they spend a lot of time advertising Maserati to you? Probably not, at least not now, once you graduate. And the parties do need to be able to communicate, part of that relationship idea, have to be able to communicate with each other. Obviously, e-commerce has changed the face of marketing. You're familiar with it, but of course, in the old days, we weren't. How were you, a little manufacturer of something in middle of Ohio, going to sell product? E-commerce has changed that. And each party must have something of value to exchange in the most typical situation, money for products or services. So this is all what we need for marketing to occur. Two more parties involved in a voluntary relationship with unsatisfied needs have a desire and ability to engage in the exchange. They have to communicate with each other, and each party must have something of value to exchange with the other one. So we say, as I start off, that marketing is the discovery and satisfaction of consumer needs, wants, and desires. So we might start with a baseline question. What do people want? Now, you might say, that's a stupid question. What do people want? It's not so stupid because people may not know what they want until they hear about it, until they see it, until someone markets it to them, until it becomes available. People may not be able to tell you what they want. They can't verbalize it. They can't explain it. And people may not be able to see the future and think about how unknown products might satisfy them. Anyone old enough to remember the Discman? Anybody know what a Sony Discman was? What was a Sony Discman? What was it?
Portable CD
player you could put around, and it was cool. It didn't have to be plugged into a wall. It wasn't a big unit. You could carry it around with you. Did you actually ever have one? Your parents did at one point. So it was really convenient compared to not having it at all, yeah? Of course, if you walked with it, what do you imagine happened to the sound periodically? It would skip around. And how many CDs could you carry with you on your walk? Not a whole lot. So if I ask people at the time of CD Walkmans, what do you want in music? You might have said, man, I'd like it a little smaller because you make small CDs. You might have said, if you were fashion, how many fashion people here? You might have said, could you make it in different covers so I could carry it around and show my style of the day? Would anybody have said, you know what I really would like it to be is a teeny little box that I could connect to the unknown internet and download thousands of songs onto and carry it around in a little box with me? Would anybody have said that? No, people can't see what the future is. Once you get a really good solution out there, people adapt it very quickly. Your parents probably aren't carrying around a Walkman or whatever it was called, a CD player anymore, because it satisfied them really well. Yeah? So where do consumer needs come from? They come from human needs. So when I say needs, wants, desires. So we all remember Maslow. We'll be talking about Maslow for the 6,000. No? Maslow's hierarchy? No. Well, maybe not. Anyhow, these are basic human needs. Things that are required to live, to be part of society. The need for food and shelter. The need to be safe. The need to be belonged and to be loved. You need food. Is anybody an aorist? They don't eat food. They just exist from air. Now, sometimes you get the occasional aorist. I don't need food. But most of us need food. Yeah? Wants are a way to satisfy needs that are shaped by your environment, culture, and personality. We have to understand both. Who is a vegetarian? One, two, two vegetarians? Vegetarian light? Anybody? Anyway, let me phrase it a different way just to be sure I'm saying it right. Anybody not eat meat? Well, my vegetarians. Oh, all right, so we got three vegetarians here. So people like deals. What if I talk to you about a really thick, tasty, well-made porterhouse steak at a bargain price with gravy and mushrooms on it? Are you going to drool? Are you ready for it? Oops. How about you, sir? No, why not? Because I'm a vegetarian. I don't eat meat. But you need food, right? Well, yeah, I need food. Well, what about the steak? I don't eat meat. All right, so we have needs, food, wants. How many other people might be interested in such a steak deal at a really great price for that? Apparently, you guys are. All right, so I might be interested, right? So arguably, no matter how tasty I make it, no matter how good a deal it is, no matter how much the price is lowered, you're going to go, nah, not for me. I need food. That's not the food for me. So again, meat eaters, how many of you guys eat lamb? Okay. Beef? Okay. How many, do we know of people in the world that eat meat but don't eat beef? Who?
My roommate only eats burgers.
Only burgers? Okay. Birds.
Aviary birds.
Aviary birds. So he's a birdist, all right. And we know of anyone else in the world that doesn't eat meat. I mean, doesn't eat beef. Okay, yes. Who else? Nobody knows where I'm going with this. In the world. Hint, hint. Say again. You speak way too much. I'm an old guy. No, that's okay. I can barely hear you. Religious beliefs. I don't know. Yeah, there might be a religion that doesn't eat beef. For example, all of India. Have you ever heard of the cow being a holy animal in India? They wander the streets. You don't eat beef there. McDonald's does not offer up a beef burger in India. Okay? Needs, wants are different. Meat eaters. So we already did this. You eat beef? Beef? Hands, just so I can get a feel. We eat beef. We eat lamb. Snake. One. Okay. Dog. Parts of the world, dog is a legit, filet of Fido is a thing. It's a way to satisfy your food. It's a want that people have. So we see this is shaped by our environment, our culture, and, bird guy, our personality in terms of how this interprets into what we want. All right? Consumer desires are strong feelings of longing or intense cravings for something. These things have strong emotional element. You may want a burger if you're a steak eater, but you might desire an A5 Kobe steak at $200 for a 6-ounce cut. A cut of a legitimate Kobe beef will cost a diner around $200, and a Kobe burger is $50. You got to be pretty involved, have a strong desire for meat to want to do one of those. Yeah. So, needs, basic. Wants filtered through society and culture, and desires, really strong pool for things. What's a market? Since obviously we're talking about dealing with consumers in a market. Well, the market is the set of all actual buyers and potential buyers of a product in a reasonable amount of time. You may be a buyer for Maserati and 15 years, you're not really a potential buyer right now. I'm not going to spend a lot of time on you. On the other hand, she might have been tempted by that steak. Maybe I should be advertising a little more strongly to her. She might actually be in the market. What are the implications of this idea of a market? I call it mad. In order to be part of a market, you have to have purchasing power or money. That is to say, something of value to exchange. I do a lot of searching for examples on the internet, and somehow I searched on a site that was selling yachts. And for the next year, I was getting ads for yachts in the mail, very colorful brochures, expensive things. I don't know what you think a college professor earns. Yachts are not in my future. It was a waste of their time. I don't have the money to buy a yacht. Second of all, you have to have the authority to make the decision, the ability to engage in an exchange. Can you think of a product that people you know might have the purchasing power to buy but not the authority to buy? I get the same. Oh, let me try you. A gun. Some people don't have the authority to buy a gun, even though they have the money. What else?
The paper that they use to make dollar bills.
Yes, because it's illegal to buy that paper. Your mind goes to an interesting place, young man.
Cars and houses.
Cars and houses. Unless, why wouldn't you have the authority to buy a car or house?
Well, you wouldn't have the authority, but you have the ability.
Nope. You have the money, but you don't have the authority or the ability. So certainly guns, certainly illegal paper.
Alcohol
is really what I was shooting for, because people of a certain age, here at college, do you guys know that you aren't legally allowed to have alcohol under 21 in the state of Ohio? Do you know that? You do. I wasn't sure. You don't know that. So now you know. You're informed. So you have the purchasing power, but you don't have the authority or the ability, technically, to buy it. And a willingness to buy the product, a desire to engage in the exchange. So my vegetarian up there, he has the purchasing power to afford a steak, a burger, maybe not a Colby steak. He has the authority to buy such a thing. He doesn't want it. Therefore, he's not in the market. He's not part of the market. So it's the actual and potential buyers of a product or service that make up the market that you should be thinking about if you're a marketer, if you're a business. Yeah? So marketing seeks to discover and then satisfy consumer needs, wants, and desires through research. That's how we find out what they want. And a marketing program. So we're in figure 1.3 of the textbook. Here we have the market, the potential and actual consumers down here. In order to understand their needs, wants, and desires, we probably have to engage in getting information about them through a topic we will talk about, marketing research, getting into their minds. So within the organization, we're going to discover the consumer's needs, wants, and desires. And now we come up with concepts for products that could satisfy those needs, those wants, those desires within the organization. And then we're going to try to satisfy the consumer needs, wants, and desires by designing a marketing program that has the right combination of product, what they want, price, what they're willing and able to pay, promotion, communication about the product to them in a way that they can understand and would appeal to them, and place, having it available to them where and they need it, when they want it. And those elements are called the marketing mix. So what's going to happen out of this? Hopefully we come out of our organization with good services, ideas, etc., that the consumer might want. And if we're successful, what do we get out of all this? Hopefully, sales and profits. Now we're down to that frontline manager's view of the world. Yes, we've generated sales and profits. So that's an overview of the organization's marketing department and how it does what it does at a frontline level. Now, you can't satisfy everybody. Let me say, with 550 students in this class, I guarantee you I'm not going to satisfy everybody. Hopefully I'll satisfy somebody. But in business, you cannot be all things to all people. So marketers need to focus their efforts on one or more specific groups of consumers who are their target audience. In our example of Lay's potato chips, who is one target audience they're focused on? The Latinx audience, right? Is that exclusive? Is that the only people that they want to market potato chips to? No. It's one of multiple target audiences they have in mind, yeah? I don't know. I mean, I think people don't drink so much soda anymore. Who drinks cola still? Some kind of cola? All right, maybe a third of us. So, who drinks any kind of Coca-Cola? Any kind of Coke? Okay. Do all you guys just drink classic Coke? That's all you drink? Classic Coke? One person. Diet Coke, or whatever they call it, Diet Coke, some flavor of Coke. All right, so would we be happy with one Coca-Cola product? Probably not. Different people out there want different things from us. They're different target audiences. Anybody who does drink Coke hate diet. Anybody who does drink Coke hate the flavors. Okay, so what do we have? Different people have different needs, wants, and desires relative to a simple product like Coke. And if we just had one Coke product, we wouldn't be satisfying a whole bunch of people. So, whether we're talking about Coke Classic, or Diet Coke, or Coke Zero, or Starlight Coke. Has anybody tried Starlight Coke yet? Okay, you like it? It's kind of weird. I think that's the audience for it. Cherry Coke, Lime Coke, and a failed product that we may talk about again, Coca-Cola Black. They are trying to satisfy the needs, wants, and desires of different people in the marketplace with different needs, wants, and desires. So it is the marketing mix that represents the tools that we marketers in business have to try to satisfy our consumers' needs, wants, and desires. Those tools that we have to work with are referred to as the four P's of the marketing mix. It's our product, spoken broadly. You'll see when we say product, we mean product and service and a whole bunch of other things. But it's our product that we're offering. It's the price that we are able to offer it at. It's our promotional method, the way that we use to communicate with this group of consumers and that group of consumers. And it's the place, the way that we make this thing available to those consumers. So product, price, promotion, and place are the four P's of the marketing mix that we'll be spending a lot of time during the semester talking about, because those are the baseline tools that marketers have. Oftentimes the marketing mix is shown in this circle. It's sort of trying to imply it's an integrated piece. And what do we have at the center of the circle on purpose? What's the focus of the circle? The consumer. All of this stuff has to have the consumer as the focus, because it's the consumer's needs, wants, and desires we have to understand and satisfy. So the marketing mix is an integrated plan of action, product, place, price, promotion, with the consumer at its focus. So periodically we'll pop this image up to remind us of what we're talking about. Most of a firm's marketing efforts involve the design of the marketing mix, the implementation of the marketing mix, and the evaluation of the marketing mix. Did I get out to that consumer to satisfy their needs, wants, and desires with the right product, place, price, promotion? Did it sell? Did it work? And if not, analytically as a manager, why not? What did I do wrong? And we have to engage in all of these things, we're busy people in marketing, in the context of the marketing environment. Here, the acronym for the marketing environment is CREST. What are the marketing environmental factors that influence our consumers and so influence us? Competition. Do we not have to pay attention to what the competition is doing? You betcha. Competition is delighted to find that we are not satisfying our consumers' needs, wants, and desires as well as we might. And if it's profitable, to take over some of our consumers and make a profit off of them. So what are they thinking? What are they doing? How are they advertising? What's their new product? What's their new service? What's happening? What's their price? Are regulatory, legal, and political factors impact our consumers and impact us as well? If you are involved in electric vehicle sales right now, there are tax credits out there that some consumers can get for some vehicles to make it more attractive to them. Had we better know about that? Had we better pay attention to it? Had we better be asking ourselves what's going to happen in the future to that legislation? You bet. S, social forces. We alluded to some of those, like the Black Lives Movement. I forget what I was going to say. And ethnic sensitivity. Technology. We've already talked a bit about technology and how our good friends at Campbell's Chunky Soup is engaged in using technology to draw gamers in. Lots more to it than that. Or Zappos, to make your feet show up with shoes on them. I missed one. Oh, CRE, economic factors. And we already alluded to what's going on with the economy, what's going on with people's income, whether they're employed or not, what's going on with inflation. And the question always is for us, not how do we personally feel about it? How does it influence our center of the thing? Our consumers. And what does it mean to our consumers? And so what do we have to do with our marketing mix? Satisfaction through value is what we're alluding to in chapter one. And customer value is that unique combination of benefits that are received by our targeted buyers, depending on what they want. So it includes things like quality. I think that's sort of a silly statement. Everything has some level of quality, yeah? Anybody know Saks Fifth Avenue? You probably see my wife there. So Saks Fifth Avenue, what level of quality do they offer up, would you say? high-end quality of clothing. Okay, so I can buy clothes at Saks. It has some level of quality, high level of quality. My wife and I disagree on certain things. When I go clothing shopping, I go to Kohl's. Do they sell clothing? They do. Do they provide value for the money that I spend? Well, since I go back and back, they do. Would you say they offer high quality? They offer good quality for the price I'm paying, yeah? So, does she work at Kohl's? Do you work at Kohl's? You work at Saks? She works at, I thought you guys were okay. So anyhow, that includes the quality. My wife spends a lot of money at Saks and feels that she's getting the quality that she pays for. I spend a fair amount of money at Kohl's, not as much as he spends at Saks, and I feel like I'm getting the quality that I want. I'm happy with what I'm getting. Convenience, if you're in business especially, but these days even consumers want on-time delivery. You don't want to order something the next day and get it 3 days later. And both before sales and after sales service at the particular price point that you are paying. So, consumer value is what we're trying to provide that satisfaction. It depends on a variety of things that our target audience may want and how they perceive it. Value marketing is a consumer-centric marketing approach. It is centered on strategies that look to exceed the client's expectation and fuel consumer loyalty in order to achieve success with our customers. At its best, value marketing strategies turn consumers into fans that help to promote products and services with their positive reviews. Have you ever put out a positive review about a restaurant, a movie, a book, a brand? Anybody? Positive reviews? Okay. Presumably, as long as it was positive, they were engaged with you enough that you felt, wow, this is worth sharing. You become more or less a fan for them. So presumably, their customer-centric marketing approach has worked out. This is something that I'm going to mess with because it didn't pop right up. This is our marketer of mobile homes over at AAA.
You know, I mean, a home is a home is a home. A mobile home, there's a lot of them out there. There's a lot of them for sale by owner. But what differentiates us, what I feel is our core, is our service. Because I go in and I go through the homes, I test the homes, and I'll fix things. For example, if there's a spot of mold or something, I don't just paint over it. I cut it out, remove it. I mean, we make the homes right. You know, I thrive and survive on referrals. I've sold homes to families 4 times. And so I don't cover up a defect. We make sure that, you know, we treat every home as though my own family member was going to move into it. And they don't really see that when they move in initially, but they also don't have problems later on. You know, anything I find, I go through the homes, I fix it. And, you know, we charge a little bit more for that, but in the end, they're getting a home that they're going to be safe and happy with. So really, I feel that it's more service than just selling houses. I want to make, these people are moving into our parks, the ones that we own the park, and we want a happy resident. I want referrals. So, you know, basically, I just want to make sure that they're getting more than they're paying for.
And any time you can give your customer more than they feel they were paying for, you've moved from satisfaction to delight. Wow, I can't believe what they gave me, what they did for me. It's more than just selling the home. It's having that relationship, providing them with value, giving them delight, so you get positive referrals, so they come back when they need the next home to you. So that's his idea of providing value in a B2C, a business to consumer area for mobile homes.
You know,
across many industries, research says, we've seen that retailers who grow customer service ratings, getting positive ratings on customer service from their consumers, the fastest, have greater sales growth. In general, when it comes to electronics, prices have come down dramatically. At the same time, complexity of the products has increased. Expert advice is more important than ever, he says. And the example is getting old. You have to really have been into technology a while ago. Anybody remember Circuit City? Anybody remember Circuit City? Nobody. So, oh, you remember Circuit City. Well, so was Circuit City a place with helpful people in each segment of the place and nice showroom and, you know, decorations? No? It essentially was a big empty warehouse, not empty, a big warehouse filled with a bunch of electronics. You good luck trying to find somebody to help you out. They'd sell you something if you were persistent. They were not Best Buy. Best Buy is still here. Circuit City is not. Electronics, selling the same product. But who's been to Best Buy? Find their service people helpful, provide good information, ever work with the geeks? They're helpful as well. One brand got the idea. One retailer got the idea. The other just never got it, didn't understand providing value to consumers. So what are some value strategies? Well, it depends on your company, your organization, who your target audience is, and what they want. One might be the best price, a good value strategy, providing economic value. When you think of the best price retailer, who comes to mind? Walmart would be one. How many of you guys love Walmart? How many of you guys hate Walmart? How many of you guys love to hate Walmart, if you know what I mean? So that might be one that's offering this value to people. Or the best product might be a value strategy, if that's what your target audience wants. A premium value strategy, providing some functional value, perhaps, for the product that you buy. Apple, I was just looking at Apple, somebody looking at Apple on their computer. Apple might have a best product approach. They would argue that their product is better than non-Apple products, and you do pay a good price for Apple products, and yet, how many of you guys buy Apple? Okay, so that might be the approach they're working with you. Best service, Nordstrom's as a retailer has very good service for their customers and have staked on that. So what's best? It often occurs in marketing. We say, we don't know what's best. Depends on you, your business, your competition, your market, your consumers. So what is best depends on your firm's missions and objectives, your competitive situation, your environment, and your customers. I can't tell you what value proposition is going to work best for you. Kohl's does okay. Saks does okay. Walmart does okay. They all have different value propositions out there. This is an example from, again, the soup industry. Campbell's again. Doug Conant, president and CEO of Campbell's Soup, it's now Mark Klaus, not important to the situation, said, look, we're losing market value with our products. Things aren't going well. So what I'm going to do, he said, is to stress products that rank number one or number two in the key categories of simple meals, baked snacks, and veggie-based drinks. That's where he was going to put his stake in the ground. That's what he was going to focus on. That's what he was going to target. So they dropped a bunch of non-core brands like Godiva chocolates. Any chocolateholics here? Anybody know Godiva as a brand? Is that a schlocky brand? Is that some cheap brand, Godiva? You're saying yes, you're saying no. Who thinks it's a pretty good brand? So Godiva, generally, is a pretty good brand. Why would they get rid of a pretty good brand? Because it didn't fit in with their strategy. It was not a simple meal baked snack or veggie-based drink that ranked number two in its category. They focused on healthier for soups, healthier V8 drinks, Pepperidge Farm snacks, and they pushed creating products that scream value, nutrition, and convenience. That was his value strategy. And he says, look, there are four musts for consumer products: value, wellness, quality, and convenience. And in fact, his strategy did help to turn around the decreasing market value over at Campbell. Good job with a focus on what he considered value for his consumers. This is Fred Hunt over at Sherwin-Williams, who I know you've all heard of. And let's see if we can get Fred to pop up for us.
This notion of value with a product is, for the marketer, the game. And there's no other way to put it. You know, you are in competition day in and day out with those who are trying to figure out a way to better sell their product and to better convince the consumer that theirs delivers on the promise. So when you talk about a commodity-based business, and almost most businesses are that way, they are at a point where the markets are relatively mature, and the product and what you can get for that are very similar. You can look at telephones, you can look at music players, you can look at appliances. In many cases, the chassis looks the same, and the buttons may look a little bit different, but in general, there is a lot of similarity in what they're offering. The difference is that the promise of who that brand is, what it's delivering to you, whether that be quality, whether that be in the case of my product lines, superior chip to wall consistency, meaning you go, you pick up that chip off the color selector at the store and you put it next to the wall that you paint and it is exactly that same color. It is going back, you know, a year later and getting that same color and the consistency being such that you can't tell the difference between those two walls that were painted. It is superior color selection. It is the feeling that you are getting the absolute best. It's one coat coverage. It's not having to do this two or three times because, my gosh, painting in and of itself is not the funnest activity. Some people like it. It's cathartic. But in most cases, they want to get done. They want to get it done once. They want to get it done right. So the promise is very much, delivery of that promise is very important.
So he says, value is the game, which is what we're talking about, value strategy. It's the way to beat competition, provide better value than they do. He says, look, overall, across a large number of product categories, the products are pretty similar. Phones, music players, etc., refrigerators. But quality, consistency, reliability, selection, offering the best makes you stand out. So getting it done, getting the job done, whether it's a phone or paint, getting it done right, and deliver on the promise that you make. I'm unique. I'm special. I'm offering you a really good value. I'm offering you a really high quality thing. It doesn't matter. Deliver on that promise is the way to satisfy consumers, is the way to be successful. Anybody like to paint walls? People. This is an ad from Domino's.
At Domino's, we're tipping you $3 for ordering carryout online. Because we appreciate those heroes who rise. And go get it. Heroes who boldly leave the coziness of their couch in pursuit of hot, delicious Domino's. You too can be a carry-out hero.
You're late.
Barely.
And get a $3 tip to use on next week's order at Domino's.
Some people have strong preference for the pizza they like. Others are somewhat indifferent. Domino's will give you $3 if you go pick it up. That's a value not everybody offers. Let me go get some Domino's. So value through their deal. Relationship marketing is a big thing today. It links the organization not only to its individual customers, but also to its own employees, to its suppliers. How many people have heard the word supply chain in recent months? Relationship with our supply chain folk. And other partners for their mutual long-term benefit. Lowe's, for example, emphasizes that they have responsibilities. The cornerstone of our company are environmental stewardship programs, strategic philanthropic giving, and focus on workplace inclusivity fuels our ability to serve the communities around us. We're stewards for the greater good. We frame our future by helping communities. We care for our employees, our associates. We invest in our communities. And we talk about our value chain. They believe in this idea of relationship marketing across the
How we create value for our customers, we look at it several different ways. First off, we're a resource in many, many ways. We're a fairly non-traditional firm, so we don't stay in a certain bucket of just public relations and marketing or advertising. We have vast experience in promotional product and special event, so our resources in that area go very deep. We're also, as a small business, working oftentimes with small to medium-sized business, we become a trusted advisor. Oftentimes the questions that they ask us or the advice that they ask us isn't necessarily related to specifically a public relations or marketing tactic. And then simply just being there for our clients, kind of going beyond the typical 9 to 5 if they're having a special event. Even if the special event starts at 10 and runs till 2 in the morning, as one time a special bank promotion did, we were there. So simply being there for our clients is something that we give what we feel tremendous value, a little bit more than they may bargain for when they sign on with us.
So whether you're selling mobile homes to consumers or business services, marketing services to businesses, B2C versus B2B, providing them a little extra is a way to delight them more than you promised, more than they expected for what they're paying. And in his world of providing marketing services to his customers, he finds these things create value and relationships. I don't know if everybody would be there for me at 2 in the morning. He was. Yay. Our approaches to marketing and managing marketing have evolved over time. They've changed. Some of the original ideas are still around for some companies, but we see an evolution of marketing philosophies. So one approach, really big at the turn of the 1900s, was a production philosophy. The production philosophy says, look, consumers want products that are available and highly affordable. This is at the turn of the Industrial Revolution when mass marketing of products is just coming up. Prior to this, if you wanted almost anything, it was custom made for you. There weren't any big manufacturing plants. You made shirts by hand to your size. You got a horseshoe beaten for you by the local smith. Now we're saying people want products that are available and highly affordable. It implies that management should focus on improving production and distribution efficiency. Anybody have operations management yet? Operations management, yeah. I don't know if they still talk about it, but in operations management, we know that the longer the production run of a single item, the lower over time the per unit cost gets because of economies of scale, because we don't have errors, because things are successful. So long runs drive down prices. It's more efficient. So this is useful when your demand exceeds your supply. People just want it. They can't get enough of it. You might as well produce more of that thing. And also when the product cost is too high, because long runs of the same thing drive down unit costs. The classic example of a production philosophy was good old Henry Ford and his original Model T. And whether or not it was true, what's the old saying? You could get a Model T in any color you wanted as long as it was black. I don't know if that was true or not. I was very young at the time, in 1900. But the point is, long production runs are the same thing. And eventually, he actually drove the price of the vehicle down that employees on his own line could afford a car. Unheard of. Production worked well for them. It's possible that in some industries today, your particular situation might have you focus on production. But a second philosophy, and here I differ a little bit from the way that the textbook talks about it, we don't always agree on everything, is a product philosophy. This assumes that customers want products, should be an S there, that offers the most quality, the best performance, the best number of features. And so what it implies the firm should do is constantly think about continuous improvement of the product. This has great appeal for engineers. Man, if we can put it in the thing, let's put it in the thing. Why not? Let's improve it. But it places focus on the product rather than on the consumer. Does the consumer really want that thing that you're adding on to it or not? I love this example. It is admittedly a little old, but this is in the early days of handheld calculators. And so this was a novel thing. You no longer had a desk calculator. You could carry it around. But Casio said, hey, here's a great idea in these early days of calculators. Let's create one that has 13 pre-programmed tunes. Now we can make beautiful music on our calculator, so it'll play Happy Birthday. This was not MP3 quality music. This was beep, 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 beep. Wow, does that drive people who want calculators to buy the product? Not a lot of them. No, I mean, what's the added value of having something that plays whatever number of songs? Just because you could do it doesn't mean you should do it. Do consumers want it? Recently, Microsoft added Snapchat-like highlights features to Skype, focusing on the product. And they ditched it because consumers said, I don't want it. In 2018, we explored some design changes and heard from customers that we overcomplicated some of our core scenarios, says their director of design. Calling became harder to execute, and highlights didn't resonate with the majority of users. Might have checked that out with your users first, but okay, focusing on the product and ignoring your consumers doesn't guarantee much success. Maybe it will for you. a sales philosophy. This approach to the market assumes that consumers will not buy enough product unless there's a strong sales and promotional effort, a strong push. It does have its use for some types of products, what are called unsought goods. How many of you guys periodically go out and look for a pair of shoes, a pair of pants, jeans, shirt? You do that occasionally? No one. How do you guys get clothed, I wonder? All right, how many of you guys go out periodically and look for a nice life insurance policy? Not a bunch of us, all right? So you probably are not out browsing for your life insurance policy. We got to sell that to you. We got to make a push for it. It's also good for industries with overcapacity who have to sell what they make. They don't have any choice given the situation, rather than make what the market wants. So they can't change what they're operating. They've got to make and sell what they're doing. We now evolve to the idea of the marketing concept. It assumes that achieving the organizational goals depends on determining and satisfying consumers more effectively and more efficiently than the competition. Sort of my view, by and large, discovering and satisfying consumer needs, wants, desires that are profit through integrated effort of the firm. So an organization should seek to make a profit by serving the needs of customer groups, says this one author. So that's the essence of the marketing concept philosophy. But of course, things evolve over that as well. They continue along. Let's see. This is our friend over at Timken, a B2B place.
In our vision of the Timken company, it's all about creating value for customers and improving customer performance. For what that means in my part of the business is helping customers improve performance of their products. So if it's a company that's doing mining, one of the things that's critical for their business is uptime of equipment. If equipment is down unexpectedly,
it's a big deal. And get to his points, because I have 2 minutes left on my digital clock. So our vision at Timken in a B2B market, create value and improve customer performance, helping uptime of equipment to save our customers in the B2B world. If you can save them time and money, you got their attention, to save them time and money and increase their productivity. You now have those clients' attention. We're going to use our equipment, our technology, and our knowledge beyond just our product to satisfy those consumers. Let me see what's next. Well, so I'm going to go one more slide because I have one more minute on my clock. So the three parts of the marketing concept: discovering satisfaction in consumers' needs, wants, and desires at a profit, or as I said earlier, to attain organizational goals through an integrated effort of the firm. This then, folks, will end the material on mini test one, which will open at 8 a.m. tomorrow and close next Tuesday at 11:59 p.m. Let me know if you're struggling with that at all, but that's the basic idea for this, okay? Have a great weekend. We'll see you next time. Thank you.